Hello, everybody. Josh Neighbors here, Locked On Big 12 Podcast. It is our weekly crossover edition. To my right, it is Stephen Simcox of Locked On Horned Frogs. And then below both of us, but not in our minds and hearts, on par with all of us, they just don't let us put us all across the screen, it is Linda Godfrey of Locked On Pokes. We have a lot to get to tonight. Caleb Williams making things fun and interesting in his transfer decision. We're still talking about that. He is the gift that truly keeps on giving to us podcasters. And then we're going to talk about overtime rules in both college and the NFL. The conversation has been ongoing. And I want to pose a question to Linda and Steven as we move forward in the show and get their thoughts. But first, it's our intro video.
You are Locked On Big 12. Your daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into the Sadness Factory. This is because Stephen's TC Horned Frogs are getting curb stomped by Texas. My Washington Wizards blew a 30-plus point lead tonight to the very shorthanded Clippers. No Paul George, no Kawhi Leonard. And my Missouri Tigers came up just short, 55-54. Against number one team in the country. And you might say, Josh, you should be happy, but they suck overall. So can't be too pleased. Linda's not too upset. Linda, you're not too upset about anything besides your Twitter conversations tonight, which we'll get to.
Yeah, I'm maybe. I do want to say last night there was a terrible car wreck in Stillwater that had AJ Ferrari, the wrestler. And I am forgetting his name. I should have wrote it down.
It's Izzy Rodriguez.
Yes, thank you. A three-time All-American cross-country runner. And then Casey Dunn pulling, he didn't know who, you know, out of a flaming car. So thankfully everything seems like it's going to be okay. But just thoughts and prayers out to everything, all those families that are dealing with that.
Yeah, really, really tough story to see it was developing last night. And what a weird moment and a great moment, the fact that it was Casey Dunn, offensive coordinator for the Pokes, that pulled – both Ferrari, and I don't know if he pulled Rodriguez out, but I know at least he pulled AJ Ferrari, who, if you guys have not seen this kid, this is actually a pretty good time to check him out. This kid is destined for and luckily we hope he still is, an amazing career in either professional wrestling or some kind of amateur wrestling, maybe in Olympics or in some kind of combat sport that he chooses. He is an amazing wrestler. Linda, you can speak to this. I mean, what is it? Reigning national champion at 197 pounds, I believe.
Yeah, and he's beyond like being a fantastic wrestler. He's also, he brings so much entertainment value, which I think is a huge selling point in all of those things that you said. You know, guys like Conor McGregor that walk around cocky, those guys are universally loved in that sport. So he's definitely got the character of a guy that's going to be very successful in that.
His name is also legitimately AJ Ferrari, and he is, as somebody who's Italian, very Italian. And I really appreciate he leans into it too, which is awesome. Also, shout out to our buddy John Williams, Locked On Sooners host. He is dealing with COVID right now. I'm not sure if anybody else in his family is, but we hope he is doing well. And also, Jake Hatch couldn't be with us tonight. He is busy. But we're really we're uplifting the folks who need it tonight. AJ Ferrari, C. Rodriguez. And also our friend John Williams. All right. Speaking of John, the Caleb Williams saga continues. Today there was a report from On3. I forgot who it was exactly. Pardon me not knowing.
Billion Body.
There you go. And he said that Caleb Williams has interest now in Wisconsin. So this felt like a situation. I forgot what the date is that the kids have to register for USC by, but it's coming here pretty soon. Wisconsin is in the mix. Then Bud Elliott on the Cover 3 podcast had mentioned that LSU, and I think he had said Miami maybe. I'm not sure. But I know at least LSU is in the mix. So, friends, this now becomes a really interesting conversation because it feels like things are opening up. Steven, I'll pitch it to you here and say, are we just setting up? Is this just still that posturing that's continuing to get him a better deal overall, or deals plural, I should say, at USC, or is there really something going on here in your opinion?
No, I think we're at the point now where it's safe to say there's something going on. Now, he could still definitely end up at USC, but if this was a slam dunk, just go reunite with your old coach, get back on the West Coast, play in the Pac-12, I think it would be a done deal by now. And I can't imagine, like, I don't know what this – here's the odd thing about in name, image, and likeness, right? Like, there's no salary cap like the NFL. So it's really hard to say, like, this is the best offer that USC could give, because I guess they could at this point say, okay, we'll throw another sponsor in here, or we'll give you X, Y, and Z. I feel like, though, they've sort of said their piece. Caleb knows what's going on there. He's familiar with the coaching staff. He knows what to expect at USC. So as this continues to linger, is he looking for greener pastures? Now, Wisconsin, I think, from a football perspective, would make some sense. Like, geographically, culturally, I would be surprised by that, just because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know he's a West Coast kid, and he was at OU. It just seems weird that he would go the Big Ten route. If it truly is just about name, image, and likeness, and they're the team that's willing to offer the most, then good for them. I would think from that perspective, LSU would probably have, you know, the most enticing offer and the best resources if he wanted to go to the SEC. But now I feel like something's going on here. I really thought that he would follow in Riley's footsteps. And, I mean, it would make some sense. The Pac-12 is struggling. He could inject some energy into that conference and that university. And it feels like something is getting held up here. So I think the options are still open. And, yeah, I would say if USC is the favorite, it's probably leaning more towards like 50% than 75 or 80% like it looked like a couple weeks ago.
So, Linda, I want to ask you about this, because this – when I thought Wisconsin, I immediately thought of Russell Wilson. And if you go back and think about what sold Russell Wilson, he was pretty open about it. He's like, they brought the offensive line in. Now, I don't think it's – I'm not sure it's as good as it used to be, but still, Wisconsin football is Wisconsin football. What's interesting about this Wisconsin team is that, if you guys remember the beginning of the year, the whole thing about Graham Mertz was that Graham Mertz was going to help bring this offense – into the 21st century. They'd never had a quarterback like Graham Mertz before, and to some extent, that was true. Now, he was a complete disaster, but Caleb Williams is a guy who brings multiple talents in different areas, much like Russell Wilson did. Not as much of a risk taker, Russell Wilson, as opposed to Caleb Williams, but this is kind of what I thought. Linda, am I on the right track here? That was a really awesome Wisconsin offense with a bunch of NFLers on it, but kind of not a good... kind of a potential lookalike here in that sense.
I saw quite a few Russell Wilson comps, like on Twitter, people talking about what Russell Wilson was able to do in college. And obviously it's transcended in the NFL. He's on an awful team with a terrible offensive line, which is concerning. But other than that, he's clearly a stellar quarterback. My issue with the Caleb Williams thing, like, I think we all thought he was going to go to USC and follow Lincoln Riley. I'm wondering now, like, how much, because there's been speculation that his dad has a lot to do with his decision. Are they butting heads about a decision? Is he looking at coaches that feel like they're going to be there long term? How much of getting burned at OU affects, because, you know, like, I'm going to be the one that supports the kid this time. Sorry for taking the role, but I have to think it's got to be more than about money right now with how long it's taken for him to make a decision. I feel like he is maybe actually weighing some decisions.
Yeah, I think, you know, and look, as the resident, like, you guys are not old, but like, as the resident youngest person here, you know, I am the youngest person here. That is factual. As a resident youngest person here, you know, I go back and think about myself at that age. While I need some time to make a decision, everybody's different. But usually at this point in time, you have a decision made. And also, the reason why I would say this, and it's a good point you made, a lot of kids make this choice in a shorter amount of time. Now, I know he is a special example, a special case. But do we think, like, the Arch Manning thing is going to be this long, drawn-out saga? I mean, the kid – it's not a saga at this point, because the kid's what? He's 15, 16 years old. So, like, he's just a high schooler at this point. And options are presenting themselves. But, you know, I know recruitments go on like this all the time. But for him, I am – you know, I'm super pro player. But there becomes a certain point where it feels like they're taking this a bit too far. I am all for getting as many good offers as possible. But could this have not happened a little bit earlier in the process, right? Could we not have been facilitating things a bit earlier on? Now to the point where I feel like they're up against the clock here with getting him into class. And also, I don't necessarily think it's a good look that some of these schools are in session, some of these guys are in class, some of these guys are in weight room type situations. I know it's not, life's not fair, but some of these teams are already starting to build some chemistry and starting to come together and starting to do some of these things. Not an excellent look if you come in a little bit later, the hotshot quarterback says, "Hey fellas, I'm here. Good to see you guys. How are the first 2 weeks of class? Y'all have fun? You guys have fun starting class?" Steven, am I a little off here? Because you know me, I'm pretty pro player, but are we hitting a point now where it's become, all right, it's all right. You gotta, I appreciate the content, man, but like, we gotta start making a choice here soon.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you mean. I think the disconnect here is, so these guys are supposed to be student athletes, but obviously, like, Caleb Williams is majoring in football. Like, he's going to be at whatever school he's at for two more years, then he's looking to go to the NFL. I think another loophole I heard about today is, so, and I'm not singling this guy out. This is what I know, so I'm going to use him as an example. O'Shawn Mathis, good defensive end at TCU. He is apparently using his scholarship at TCU right now. He's going to go through the spring semester, go through classes, not practice with the team because he's in the transfer portal, but he's going to use up a scholarship and then he's going to transfer at the end of the spring semester. So, like, he's using his football scholarship. He's not training with the team. And then he's going to go somewhere else after being just a student for a couple of months, which, hey, if that's an opportunity you have, I think that's more, it's within your right to take it and good for you. It's just, it's another aspect of this where it's like, I think we push for so long at the idea of, well, coaches get to do whatever they want. You know, players are bringing in all the revenue. They don't have any autonomy. And so it sort of inched closer and closer. Also, another factor is the NCAA just sort of sat on their hands and didn't do anything about this. And then, boom, like, name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, freedom of movement all came at one time. And now you have this scenario where there's a lot of unintended consequences to some good things that are happening. And yeah, it does stink. Like, you know, there's some, like, if he ends up at Wisconsin in a month or so, then Graham Mertz has been there going through the offseason program. There's probably, you know, a freshman down there that's been grinding through film and looking at the weights, and he's not going to get a fair shake because Caleb Williams is walking the door, right? And he's probably going to be the starter, and that is an issue, and there's probably needs to be some regulation here. But I feel like I'm not so concerned about it big picture wise, because I think we're talking about a small portion of, you know, college athletics that wield this type of power, right?
Like, yes, I think you're right. I just want to bring this up, is that, so, like, let's just say he picks USC, right? And I think there's a chance the public perception on him turns, because he's got a I mean, he had a couple of games this year, guys, quite frankly, that were like complete you-know-waters. Like, they were complete crap. That first half against Kansas was embarrassing. I thought it was an embarrassing first half, particularly for him. Baylor, that was a pretty embarrassing performance. Like, they had his number pillar to post. Second half of the Oklahoma State game, they had him not as – Baylor had him seeing ghosts. Oklahoma State, not as much. Thing was a little closer. But, like, what if he drops a couple of those off the bat? Like, that's – like, people would be like, so this guy had us waiting for a month, comes here and shows up. I just think it's important that these things are taken stock of. Like, I'm not – my opinion on him is not going to change. I think we're all pretty familiar with this process now, especially his. Hearing about his father, hearing about some of the demands, hearing that they want, like, look, this is not really driven by him, but this feels like, to me, it's putting him in a situation where if he sucks the first couple weeks, like, the pressure's going to ratchet up on him, and it might not be in a way that's going to be constructive because of this process right now. Linda, do you feel like that's
yeah, potentially? Unfortunately, yeah, as a football fan, you guys know how reactionary fans can be of specific teams. Today I saw people under the the rumor that Wisconsin was on the radar for Caleb Williams, people were like, oh, well, he could just go there because we have insert whoever, you know, whatever school thinks that they have a shot at Caleb Williams, current starting quarterback. And I'm going like, I think Caleb Williams is like one of those quarterbacks in college where you're, it's pretty much an upgrade. I mean, if you've got
Alabama and Ohio State, very, are the only two.
Very yeah. few schools that it's not an upgrade to go to Caleb Williams. So, I mean, that rhetoric is already out there and it's going to increase tenfold if there's even a tiny bit of a bad game. It's
well, didn't Oklahoma fans try this too? They tried to do the whole thing where they were like, yeah, we're better off now. Steven, go ahead. Yeah, you can see you got some.
No, I like this point you brought up though, Josh, because it made me think about, and we didn't really see this last year, but I remember when Nick Saban said, oh, Bryce Young has, you know, whatever it was, like 9 figures worth of name, image, and likeness money at SEC Media Days. And everyone was sort of like, oh, wow, well, that went under the radar. And one of my first thoughts was, what if he's bad? Like, and he was great, but what if he goes out there and suddenly has 3 or 4 bad games? Because one thing about the coaches getting paid is that most of the time in college football, if a team sucks, the blame shifts pretty much squarely on the coach. Like, people blame the players, sure, but for the most part, it's like, okay, this coach is awful, this coaching staff is bad, there's no accountability, whatever, we need to change that. If all of a sudden, you know, Caleb Williams has a couple car dealerships that give him cash basically to do whatever, essentially nothing, he's playing poorly, how much scrutiny is on him, how much criticism is levied his way. Like, there's a fair amount of that already. I worry about guys and, you know, getting put in that pressure cooker. And it comes with the territory, I guess. Yeah. But it's an unfortunate
DJ Uyunglele is a good case of this, right? I mean, the Dr. Pepper commercial that we all saw, and from the outset, it was a rough season for DJ. I mean, that Georgia game was a nightmare, and it really never got that much better for him throughout the course of the season. So, but like, I think the people would say to counter us, well, you guys want a professionalism, and these kids are going to get, you know, they're going to get hammered like professionals. But also at the same time, too, I think these businesses should see the inherent risk of trusting a college kid. They're kids. They're still growing up. They're still going to go through these learning, you know, paths or you know, kind of experiences. And so, like, when you're investing in a kid, that's very much what you're investing in, right? This is the same for a lot of totally forgetting her name, Simone Biles. Like, this is a very good example, right? Do you think a lot of the people? Do you think who is it? American Express, one of the cards. I forget which card sponsors her. Do you think they were thrilled when she was sitting out in the Olympics and was going through that, you know, that kind of mental strife that she was going through? No, they probably weren't. But like, you have to show some compassion. And there were a lot of people out there who were hammering her for that stuff. It was pretty awful to see.
Like that.
It was pretty awful to see, right? I think with what we're seeing now, like, there is a definite avenue. And I think there's actually a good candidate for this in the Big 12, the University of Texas next year playing quarterback. Like, there are some definite situations where what we're talking about right here could come up. I think you're spot on, Steven. I hadn't even thought of situations like that when we started this conversation, but now I'm thinking, like, you know, what is the appropriate line of scrutiny for somebody who is between the ages of 18 and 22 or even 23, 24? At what point do we look back at ourselves at those ages and say, hold on here. All right. Hold on. You know, think about all the accomplishments that Caleb Williams already has. Like, that Texas game was one of the more impressive things I've ever seen my entire life. That throw that he ripped, I forget who it was that caught the ball, maybe Marvin Mims, that he just ripped toward the corner was like a 1 in a million throw. And so what point can we like appreciate the kids, you know, put some criticism on them, but still be fair to who they are as people at that point in their lives? I don't know. I find this all fascinating. Does anybody else want to build off what I said, or do we want to move on from this?
I just think we have to keep in perspective that, like, while, like, we look at the full numbers and everything and we're diving deep into why these guys choose schools, a lot of fans are just looking at, you know, he plays for the school. Listen, I know some Oklahoma State fan accounts just specifically on Twitter that are not kind people. So it definitely, there are some bad fans. So we just have to make sure we even out whatever terrible scrutiny gets put on kids with like a regular amount of should have thrown the ball out of bounds calling him names and stuff.
Like my preseason questioning of Max Duggan, right? That's the appropriate level. Steven, anything else before we hear a quick word from our sponsor?
No, I think this is, a good conversation, and I don't have a great answer for you. Like typically I'm in the side of these kids are pretty much off limits. Like we can criticize their play on the field, but that's about as far as it goes. But it does get murkier when you're talking about making a living off of it, even
brands.
With the age
demographic. They're brands now, right?
And brands and, and so what if somebody has a weekly radio hit and they're struggling, all of a sudden they don't want to do it? Kind of going back to that Simone Biles conversation, like what is the responsibility of these young people in some of those situations? It's going to be interesting to see it play out. But for Caleb's sake, I think eventually you just have to make a decision and run with it. But that's going to be his choice, not ours.
I can't wait to see OU fans support him at Wisconsin and then just be indifferent if he's at USC, right? Because, at this point, they're like, we really just want to hose Lincoln Riley as much as possible. That is their goal. All right, here, quick word from our sponsors, our friends at Built Bar. Go to built.com today. That's built.com. You guys can check out their line of Built Bars. Built Bars can be a great part of any New Year's resolution. Replace the candy bar with a Built Bar. It tastes just as good, and it's much better for you. Most Built Bars have 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs, 17 grams of protein, and once again, much better than the candy bar. Double candy bars have 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. So go to built.com today. That's built.com. You guys can check their extensive line of Built Bars that they've got right now. Use the promo code LOCKED15, 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 LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com today. All right, so we're coming off the heels of a magical weekend of NFL playoff football. And that got us thinking about overtime rules as a whole, all right? People are clamoring for change the 10-minute overtime rules. I will ask you all this first question, all right? Which current format do you like more, the NFL overtime or the college overtime? Let me set this up further. Current, for those of you who don't know, current pro overtime is a coin toss. All right. Whoever wins the coin toss will usually receive. If the team that receives scores a field goal, the other team is going to get the ball, the chance to continue on, tie, win the game, whatever. If that team who receives the ball scores a touchdown, the game is over. It's the end of the contest. All right. In the NFL, I believe if they hit the first overtime ending, correct me if I'm wrong, do they reset or do they continue play where they are? Do we know on this?
I think.
Sorry, what's the question?
Once they hit the end of the 10-minute overtime period, do they continue from where they are or do they reset?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
There very often. Now,
we haven't gotten there yet, right?
We haven't gotten there in a playoff game yet.
All right. Well, so I'll research that in a second while I talk to you guys about this. But the college overtime. We all know this pretty well. Each team gets the ball on the 25-yard line. It's also determined who gets the ball first by a coin toss. If you go to a second overtime, you are required to go for two after a score. If we reach a third overtime, it just becomes rock'em sock'em robots. You get a two-point conversion, you get a two-point conversion, you get a two-point conversion. Now, so Linda, I'll go to you first on this. Which one would you currently prefer? College or pro? Because actually there is an argument for both, I think, with each team actually getting the ball in college.
I prefer college. That's the easy answer.
Why?
Okay, so specifically this weekend when the Bills and the Chiefs played and they went to overtime, the argument for the Chiefs winning that game all weekend long has been that defense wins championships. Well, the defense didn't win the Chiefs shit. Pardon my French. The defense couldn't stop the Bills either. My proposal is that we play a game of horse with the kickers and they just keep backing up until one of them misses. And then we just move on. Or the head coach's race.
I do have a rule on this. All right. So, the captain who lost the first overtime coin toss will either choose to possess or the ball. Let's see. Hold on. That's not what I wanted in the end here. The same rules apply at the end of the second and fourth regulation time periods. All right. So basically they just reset. Oh, they reset after two is what I'm seeing right here. If the score is still tied at the end of an overtime period, or if the second team's initial possession has not ended, the teams will play another overtime period. Play will continue regardless of how many overtime periods are needed for the winner to be determined. I think it's the same thing. All right. They said second and fourth overtimes, they switch. We haven't reached this point yet, so let's just presume there's nothing after this. Let's just talk about the one overtime that we do have right now. Steven, where do you come down on this?
Okay, I'm going to shock you guys, and this is not me being like Skip Bayless, and I'm kind of scared because I think Linda's more passionate about this than I am. But I'm a fan of NFL overtime, and I'll tell you why. Like the college thing is not football. You put the ball at the 25-yard line, you're practically in the red zone. I realize people like that both teams get the ball, but I just think there's too many college overtimes where we saw A&M and LSU a couple of years ago that went to 7 OTs, which was it sort of entertaining? Yeah, it was. By the end of it, I just kind of wanted Jimbo and Edo to fight at midfield, but it was also like, okay, let's just get to the end of this. You know, we saw Kentucky and Arkansas years ago. What was the game this year? Was it Penn State and Illinois that went to like 10 overtimes?
It was stupid. It was back and forth
action. It was just back and forth. I get that people are mad about the way that game ended on Sunday, but keep them out of the end zone, Buffalo. They can kick a field goal, but keep them out of the end zone. I know that's difficult. It's Patrick Mahomes, it's Travis Kelce, it's Tyreek Hill. But like they had the ball with 13 seconds and you couldn't keep them from getting to field goal range. Then you couldn't keep them out of the end zone. You deserve to lose the football game. I'm sorry Josh Allen didn't get to touch the ball. I love it. He is like a robot with just a rocket arm and he's just running around. He's built like a tank. But I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to say if you can't keep that team out of the end zone on the first possession, that ends the ball game. And I feel like it keeps us from a lot of gimmicky finishes.
But then that means in playoff football, 11 overtimes, 10 of them have been decided because of a coin toss, 7 of which were decided on the first drive. That's over 60% finishes in the playoffs. I'm not saying like for regular season, I don't give a shit. Tie, do whatever you want. I don't care.
Right.
In playoff football, the teams are so evenly matched. It's absolutely unfair. Both defenses could not stop anything from happening. If Josh Allen and the Bills win that coin toss, the Bills win that game, period. I don't think there's any argument against it. Sure, don't do extra points. Skip extra points altogether in overtime. You have to get a two-point conversion. If you don't, other team gets a chance. If they get the two-point conversion, they win. Go back and forth that way. Still have to go to the length of the field. You know, full kickoffs, I don't care. But I think it's insane to not give both. Let me mix both NFL and college overtime. Because NFL players, especially in the playoffs, don't need to be playing 7 overtimes. They're going to have to play
again. Especially now we've added the game.
I get that.
Now we've added the game. We added a playoff round.
I get the safety concerns, but from the NFL is an entertainment business. And from an entertainment standpoint, as soon as the Chiefs won that coin toss, they turned the game off. It was over. I knew they were going to score a touchdown. There was no point to finish the game. From an entertainment standpoint, I think it's bad.
That exact point I was going to make. That was the exact thing I was going to say. And I think about this too when I think about other sports as well, right? You got to think about it from an entertainment product standpoint. I cover baseball. The designated hitter, right? We do not need pitchers out there hitting. It makes no sense. So that is why we need a DH, because it is somebody else out there who deserves to be out there doing what they should do professionally. To that extent, that apply what kind of logic now to the NFL, right? We want to see both these teams get their shot to do what they do. The point you made, Linda, about both teams, if we're playing to a playoff and we're in the playoffs, we played to a draw through 60 minutes. What we're saying, this is not, this is not Pittsburgh and Detroit tying in the regular season. This is, we're in the playoffs. We're trying to decide who the best team is to move forward to continue playing for a championship. it is important that we let these teams fully express themselves, I guess is the right way to say this, right? Each team should get a chance to express their offense, express their defense, express their special teams, if you will, express their short yardage abilities. I'm with you on this. I think Steve, to Steven's point, I do understand it. But the idea that everybody needs to get a shot. Now, I think with the 10 minutes, it doesn't matter as much. But I would maybe extend it to 15. I would require the rule of going for two. I completely agree with that. I will say, I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast the other day, and I want to know what you guys think of this idea. So an old Patriots coach suggested that, let's just say a team wins the coin toss, and they have the ball, and they go down and score, right? How would you guys feel if they said, all right, they scored in seven plays, other team, you now have seven plays to go down and score? Now, the problem here would be that what happens if you intercept the ball? It's like, all right, what are the parameters then? Maybe you just say, you know, whatever team scores kind of sets the rules. I don't know. But I think that's an interesting idea. I think there's ways to get creative. I'm not sure we have to get too far off the rails, but like, I think there's pretty clear what we're doing right now is not good enough.
So, but what's the solution? Are we playing like a 15-minute quarter? So, okay, so the Bills go down and score. So then what happens?
But
the Chiefs get the ball again, and then we do it. Like, at what point do we call it? Like, what's the
until
what's
somebody the doesn't convert on a two-point conversion? And for all the Chiefs fans that are like, defense wins championships, then why are you so worried about putting your defense out against Josh Allen? I'm not talking specifically to you, but right. I've seriously been having this argument for like 48 hours, and I'm starting to get a little
well. It's just I think we're at a point now where it's pretty clear. It's like, all right, the NFL. Here's the thing. They're close, right? They're really close. Like, if you take out the heads or tails at the beginning, if you actually don't have to take that part off. If you just have the heads or tails decide who gets the ball first, and there is a somebody gets the ball second, it's fine. We're actually okay, right? They're a lot closer than college football, who has been like 25-25. Next time, go for two. Now we're just going for two. It's like, this is not football. This is horseshit is what that is. Like, did you guys watch the end of that Illinois game? That Illinois-Penn State game was horrendous because they were just running the same plays repeatedly. You don't have that many two-point plays. It's at least my understanding. Like, you don't have, like, a bunch of two-point plays that you're running. Like, at some point, you're like, I guess we'll just try the A-gap run. Like, is that what I guess what we're going to do right here? That's what we're going to do right here.
No, I get it. I just like my thing is, and I understand, Linda, it's a very good point. And I saw that earlier this week. That's like 60% of the time, the team that wins the coin toss wins the game in these situations. I just don't think it's too ridiculous to ask the defense to keep somebody out of the end zone. Like, I feel like that's a decent benchmark. And from the entertainment standpoint, like, that game was on for almost 4 hours. I mean, I like, it was a good game. I don't really feel like anybody's saying, oh man, I really missed out on a lot of Bills Chiefs. Right. I need to watch 60 minutes. Like, they had a good feature on whoever snitched on Anne Frank last week. There's some other good stuff, I feel like, on that show. It was a great weekend of football. I'm not going to be upset if they adjust the overtime rules. I just think the NFL rules are okay.
I can take okay. I just think I had a lot of people tell me, like, well, rules are rules. But yeah, no shit. Well, we changed them in 2011. I'm just like, they're better than those rules. But like, to insinuate that because it's a rule, it can't ever change. Like, we don't add or change rules in the NFL every offseason. All season was people complaining about the taunting rule. And now I just want to go back and be like, rules are rules.
So like, are we shocked? I'm shocked they didn't give Tyreek Hill a penalty.
Yeah.
Wild. Like, giving the peace sign to a guy that is ahead of you is 100. No, I'm 100% okay with it. But like, it is 110% taunting. Like that, taunting. Like that has been taunting all season long. Once again, as a Chiefs better, not upset, not mad. They didn't call that. But yeah, that was an interesting move by Tyreek Hill. So go ahead. Go ahead, Linda.
I just want to say to Steven that I agree that the defense, like, I'm not saying that the defense didn't blow the game. I just also can acknowledge that the overtime rules, in my opinion, are trash.
No, I get it. I feel like it's an imperfect system. So if you're asking me which one does it better, I think it's the NFL. But I'm fine with giving the Bills another shot to have the football.
All right. So, yeah, because that's one thing that's like, it's an imperfect, it's going to be imperfect anyway, I guess, any way you look at it. But like, it could be functionally fine if we just change the rule and say, all right, you get a chance to respond. You know what I mean? Like, whatever happens with the offense, the team that was on defense first gets a chance to respond. That's how it's going to work. College, on the other hand, like,
messy.
So, a couple things. I understand not wanting a 7 overtime game. The number of occurrences that we're getting these games, like I wouldn't actually consider Illinois versus Penn State a true 7 overtime game or however many it was, because they were just exchanging 2-point plays. Yeah. So at what point is like it's not really a full game? Carolina and Tech a couple years, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, did this a couple years ago. I think they got to 5 or 6. I forgot what theirs was. I think there's a number for me, but what I would say is to make sure we don't reach that number is I would go from the 40 and the 40. That's what I would do. And at a certain point, okay, maybe we go from, you know, let's just say we're 3 or 4 overtimes in. Maybe we go from the 15 to the 15 and it's like third down or second down, right? You know what I mean? You know, if because it does reach a certain point where I'm not comfortable putting unpaid labor out in the field for a, you know, LSU A&M can't happen again.
No, right? I like that. And I think like putting one of my issues with college is you're automatically in field goal range. So it's like you have to work to not be able to at least score a point. And I know college kickers, as Linda knows very well, that's always an adventure, and a 42-yard field goal is not a gimme. And I do think like, yeah, maybe the solution is you get to the second or third overtime and you can't kick anymore. It's okay. We start at the 25. You have to score a touchdown and you have to go for it on fourth down. But I feel like there's a way to make it shorter without going to basically penalty kicks, which is what they're essentially doing now.
That is effectively, but once again, the reason why this is the problem with college's version of penalty kicks, it doesn't end the game. It actually doesn't end the game. Yeah. It didn't end the game this year in that situation when we actually saw it. It didn't really accomplish, because penalty kicks, it eventually does end the game, right? It's not that taxing. We can't have soccer players out there into the 150th minute running around like, you know, because you're not playing soccer at this point, you're just surviving. We don't want players out there surviving, which was the end of the A&M-LSU game. So, and I to your point, the 40-yard line, 40-yard line to me feels pretty fair. That does put you in range of like 5% maybe of FBS kickers, right? On a nice day, on a good day, maybe if you're lucky. So, Linda, what are your thoughts about how college should be rearranged?
Yeah, I like backing it up a little bit. I think 25 is probably giving a little bit too much to the winner of the coin toss, you know, just like right out of the gate.
Right.
40 yards back gives you a chance to set up more plays. I think it's a much more variable distance in terms of like what can happen to get into the end zone. Like you said, like college kickers are never a guarantee, but 25 out, you know, close, 30 and in, that feels pretty safe. 32 in for college kickers is usually pretty safe. Anything 40 plus, you're looking at potential disaster. So it's an easy way to take that option out of it for coaches.
All right, one more quick word from our sponsors here before we wrap up the show. Today's show is brought to you all by NetSuite from Oracle. Guys, this is it. This is the putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours, but you're on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? I hope not. That'd be really bad if it was. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. Over 28,000 businesses already use NetSuite for the new year. They are offering a new financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/lock. That's netsuite.com/LOCKED. Once again, head to netsuite.com/locked for the special one-of-a-kind financing offer right now. Once again, netsuite.com/locked. All right, we're going to talk basketball. We're kind of out of time at this point. You know, we can't help it. We love football. We're football junkies here on this show. All right, to wrap up, Steven, give us your championship weekend picks in the NFL. Who is going to be playing in the Super Bowl?
Ooh, yeah, I'm going to take Chiefs-Niners. You know, I really like Cincinnati, and I'd love to see Joe Burrow get in. I just can't see that Bengals offensive line holding up the way it did against Tennessee and them pulling off another victory. And San Francisco, it'll be interesting. I want to see Kyle Shanahan in that running game against a team that can really stop the run. But, yeah, I like San Fran. They just kind of feel like a team of destiny right now.
Linda, go ahead.
If San Fran wins, it's just like the nail in the coffin of quarterback, or that wins are a quarterback stat with Jimmy G at the helm. But I'm taking
– He did make some big throws. He did make some big throws, to his credit.
Okay. The I'm taking the Rams. I love Matthew Stafford. I'm all for the redemption arc. And I can't in good faith pick the Chiefs because I'm a Broncos fan. So it's Joe Burrow and Evan McPherson, baby.
Road game for the Rams again at home, which will be great for them. They'll really enjoy that. I'm conflicted here too because I don't want to say any more Jackson Mahomes stuff. I'm like the rest of Twitter. We're over it. We're just really over it. I think Patrick Mahomes might be over it too. So I'm cheering for Joe Burrow. The Chiefs are like just an absolute freaking machine. I've been saying this for weeks. Even after the Bengals game, I was like, look, this feels like the team to me. On the NFC side, I should tell you guys something real fast. Like, people always say this game comes down to blocking, tackling. San Francisco is like anytime, anywhere, any place, we'll be tougher than you. We don't care what the weather is. They are the toughest sons of bitches I've ever seen in my life. Like, that game in the snow. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw this Rodgers quote that's been circulating around where he said a couple years ago after they lost, we'd love to get one of these at home, right? We'd love to get one of these 15-degree weather. It's a bit different. Turns out it's not. Trent Williams just running folks over. Absolutely love it. Jimmy G, like, you guys tell they actually do believe in him. There's a certain belief in, like, Robbie Gould being like, you're a legend, man. You're a legend. It's just like, no, Robbie, you're the legend. But still, we appreciate you telling Jimmy G that. That there is a certain belief level there with them and with Jimmy G. And I actually think he's pretty tough. Like, that drive, I mean, he kind of just got nutted up and got it done. Like, I think, lack of a better term, right? I mean.
Well, as someone who is also incredibly handsome and bad at their job, I respect and admire Jimmy G. We're in this together, brother.
All right, Steven, where can people find you? Oh, so for me, it's 49ers and it's I want Stafford, but it's going to be 49ers versus the Chiefs rematch. All right.
I'm writing it down. We're going to revisit it.
I'm going to bet on the Rams because I want Matt Stafford to win really badly, but Shanahan owns his number, McVay's number right now. All right. Steven, where can people find you and your work and all of its variety?
At Simcox Steven on Twitter, show with that locked on TCU. And yeah, well, I'm glad we didn't talk basketball. We'll discuss TCU blowing a tire against Texas on Tuesday night at some point. And the show is Locked on Horned Frogs. Thank you, as always, Josh, for letting us plug.
Yes. Linda.
You can find me on Twitter at Lindellians. I promise I'm not always this aggressive. And it's Locked on Pokes on all your podcasts.
We like it when you're this aggressive.
This is like the most rogue group of the Locked on
Pokes. Yeah, this is the rogue group. Yes. This is the off the tracks group. It's great. All right. You guys can find me on Twitter at LOBig12. That's the show. You can find me personally at @JoshNeighbors_. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you guys get your podcasts. Just look up Locked on Big 12. Please hit that subscribe button. Send us your hate and like the show when you send us your hate in the comment section below. All right, friends, until next time, as always, stay safe, everybody out there right now.